Before we begin this morning, I wanted to point out to all of the men in the congregation and some who may not even be present this morning that Men's Day is a once-a-year event. There's another 364 days for you to get involved, and there's lots going on. And I would really encourage all of the men to find a place to fit in, to become a part of the great work here. To get involved, you do not know the blessing and the opportunity that you are missing by not getting involved in the men's activities. And so I would encourage you to get a hold of Don or Joe, myself, Chuck, anyone, and find out how you can plug in to the activity here that the men have going on. I'll also caution all of you this morning that when I went to seminary, I did not take Worship 101. Now, this will become real important in a moment here. Back when the original Men's Day was scheduled, which I don't know, was January or February, we've got all those snow days mixed in there, a group of us, the men's ministry, Chuck and some others, got together and, you know, what could we do on Men's Day that would lift up the whole body and would result in worship to the Lord? Typically, Men's Day, I think, where most of us have been, is several men come up and share their witness or their testimony. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But we thought maybe we'd try something different this year. And so we decided that we'd focus on worship and trying to learn a little bit more about worship. And the Lord, for one reason or another, laid that task on me this morning. And so I was all excited about it after the meeting that we had. Yes, we'll focus on worship. And I ran home to begin to pray and to think about what the message would be. And it dawned on me, wait a minute, you didn't study worship in seminary. How are you going to speak on that? In fact, see, what happened is I wanted to take Liturgy 105, but you had to have Worship 101 first, and they wouldn't let you. Okay. That's why they wouldn't let me in the Gregorian chant glee club, you know. It is, however, an interesting task to kind of try to define something that's almost indefinable and yet something that's very much a part of our lives as Christians. Funny thing is, Rick and I were joking this morning about this thing falling off my belt. Worship is such an integral part of our Christian walk, and yet I imagine if you ask most Christians to define what worship really is, it's difficult for them to define. And so I began to study and pray over this and arrived at this definition, our response to the awareness of a divine presence. That's what worship is. How we respond when we realize we're in the presence of God. And so I wanted to look at that this morning, and there's some Bible verses that I wanted to share first, and then I thought, oh, thank you, Joe. You really are a blessing this morning, in spite of what Don says about you. I thought that I would sort of offer myself up this morning, heaven help all of us, and take you through some experiences that I've had over the 15 years or so I've walked the earth. And it's another job. Boy, we're going to have a hard time this morning. But I thought that I would share some experiences that I've had as I've tried to grow in my Christian walk. And perhaps it will help all of us. And maybe some of the mistakes I've made will help you avoid some. And maybe as a congregation, we can come closer on a Sunday to really worshiping God. And so I want to share a couple of verses, and then I'll share a few life experiences with you. And then from that, we'll see if there's a couple of lessons that we can take from this morning. Now, the good news is I don't have to be out of here until noon, so we have lots of time. The second part of the good news is if you're not in a Sunday school class, there's a great one I hear meets up here at 11 o'clock. Be more than welcome to join us. So with that, then, I want to point you to a few few scriptures this morning. The first one is John 4:24. When I was in seminary, I can't remember what week it was, but it was early in my first theology class, and I majored in theology, and I can't get enough of it, learning more and more about God every day. And I remember the professor, Dr. Collins, came in, and he asked the question, who is God? Which is a darn good question in a theology class, I might add. And there was a long debate about who God is and what he is and all of that. And then he very kindly pointed us to this verse, and it is key to knowing what worship is. And John 4:24 says, God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. And so we need to understand right away this morning that it's a spiritual relationship we have with God, not so much the physical, and we'll see more of that as we go on this morning. But above all, remember that God is spirit, and he asks us and wants us and desires us to worship him in spirit. It's very key. Two others that we have, Hebrews 10:25, which I believe will be on the screen there in a moment, tells us that we should gather together as a congregation. It's interesting, if you read that verse, by the way, you'll see that it also says that we should gather together more often as we see the time approaching Christ's second coming. And yet, isn't the trend today in contemporary society to cram as much as we can into as few of times together as we can? And yet here Hebrews tells us we should be meeting more and more often as a congregation as Christ's second coming draws closer. But clearly we are commanded to meet as a congregation to worship. And then Matthew 18:20, Chuck shared this verse with us last week. Wherever two or more of us are gathered, Christ is in our midst. And that's what I want to talk about this morning, is the presence of Christ, the presence of the Holy Spirit among us during a time of worship. And so with these verses, this is where I had decided that I think the best way to try and come up with a definition of worship and how I could improve my own worship was to look at some of my experiences. And perhaps all of us have different ones, but perhaps through some of the things I learned beginning as a very young Christian, perhaps will help you build your relationship with God in a way that really lifts him up during worship. Now, I accepted Christ at a very young age, but then I tell people I almost immediately rebelled against what I had just accepted. It was sort of like if I'd have known I was signing up for that, I wouldn't have done it kind of thing. Strange thing that teenagers go through. I think we have a lot of internal struggles. And it wasn't really until I was about 30 in a small little Baptist church up in Minnesota that I turned the lordship of my life over to Christ. And I finally said my way wasn't working, and I wanted to try his. And he led me to a pastor and a group there that affected my life forever. And one of the things that happened there is I was given the opportunity to become a part of a mission church. Now, the church we were in, if they had 75 in worship on a Sunday, that was a really great day. I don't think they'd ever had 100 people. But even up in that little church in Minnesota, they had a mission church about 40 miles off on the lake. And the pastor said that he thought it would be a good experience for me to lead a worship service in this small mission church. And so I said to him, I said, well, I don't even know. I've never preached before. I wouldn't know. I don't know anything about it. And he says, it's very easy. He said, when it's your time to speak, you tell them about Jesus. That's it. So I gave that some thought, made some notes. He told me that the congregation was small. That was about all I knew about it, and that they met in somebody's home. And so one Sunday, I drive over Lake Superior to this place in Wisconsin. And sure enough, it's a person's home, and I go in, and the congregation is seven people. It's one family of four and a family of three, and they have arranged in their living room seven chairs, two rows of three. And they actually did sit in the front row. I was impressed with that. We had no music, but they had hymn books. And they were determined that they were going to worship like any other church would worship. And they had a little bulletin they had typed up. and we sang our three hymns. You know, in those days, it was three hymns and then a sermon with 3 points and a poem, if I remember right. But they had their three hymns. The one fella got up and actually took an offering. And we sang hymns without the piano, and then it was my turn to speak. And at the beginning, I thought, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? But you know what? By the end of that morning, it was probably one of the neatest worship experiences I'd had. Because here were seven people who believed so much in spreading the gospel in a remote area that they committed themselves to this and remained faithful to it. And I learned right away that it's what's inside that's worship. It's your response that's worship. It's not necessarily the surroundings. Well, then the next little experience that I had, we got stationed in Hawaii about a year and a half later. That's a story in and of itself. And while we were there, we were part of a church there. There's many ethnic groups in Hawaii, many from the Far East. And we became friends with a Japanese-American lady and her husband, whose mother and father were now American citizens, but pretty much were Japanese, spoke very little English, and quite elderly. And while we knew them, her mother, who was a very active Christian in the Japanese church on the island, passed away, and we were invited to a Hawaiian-Japanese funeral. And the funerals I had gone to back in the mainland were the standard sort of funeral, black suit and mourn for 3 days and, you know, all these sorts of things. And she warned me right away. She said, no, you're going to wear aloha attire. You're going to bring a gift for the family, and we're going to have a terrific celebration. She said, in addition to that, because she's Japanese, the Japanese church in Hawaii, the big one, has a pastor who's bilingual, and he will speak both in English and in Japanese. And so off we went. It was the most incredible service I had been at. A great celebration because this fine Christian woman had now been called home and was home with her Savior. And a big party followed the service out in the back. There was a terrific amount of singing, joy. The worship service struck Sherry and I because not only was that pastor gifted, he just would flow between the Japanese and the American to where you almost thought you understood Japanese. But he brought the gospel message. At that funeral, it was the first time I'd been at a funeral where they brought the gospel message, and you could sense God's presence in that room and the peace that it brought all those there who had lost somebody. And so we learned again that you didn't have to be in a church to worship God. And then I think the next thing I have up here is the years later, we got Lord sent us down to Albuquerque, New Mexico. And again, living across the street from us, an African-American couple, very active in their church in Albuquerque, and young Christians. And we developed quite a friendship, and particularly Lisa would come over in the afternoons or the evenings when we had time, and we'd study together and pray together. And a real strong relationship grew between Courtney and Lisa, my wife and I, and the children that they had at the time. Later, Lisa would have Bradley and would ask me to be his godfather and Sherry, our godparents, if you will. I'd never done that before. That was interesting. And he's turned out to be just a terrific guy. Well, a relationship developed. Now, we then later moved on. We came out here, as a matter of fact. Graduated seminary, came out here. They moved on other places. In fact, now I think they're up in New Jersey now. But a few years back, they were living in Cincinnati. And it was time for Bradley to get dedicated. And she asked me to come and lead the baby dedication. I remember the fear in my heart. I called Chuck. There's no such thing as baby dedication at seminary. How do you do one of these things? And so Chuck walked me through all the different things that you should think about, and we prayed on it, and off we went. And I was just focused on this baby dedication thing for Bradley. And come Sunday, I began to wonder a little about the church. And I've got to confess, this is where another one of my learning experiences occurred, because we had, Sherry and I, over years leading up to this, had gone to all sorts of Jewish Catholic Mass. I've gone to Quaker services, Mennonite services, Church of Christ. And some of these groups don't just worship for 1 hour. You know, now I was raised that a good worship service always ends at noon. You know, if you have a top-notch pastor, you know that, because at 5 to 12, he's doing the invitation. And then you're out the door at noon. And that's the way I was raised. And I'm telling you, if the pastor ran 10 minutes over, you needed to start talking to the search committee. So the first time I did, I think it was a Church of Christ, I think it was. I can't remember now, but we went to a church somewhere once in Florida. They didn't have musical instruments. So that part of their faith was they weren't allowed in the service, but they sang a lot, and they spoke in tongues, and they would dance up on the pews, and it was pretty impressive. And you didn't know when it was going to end, you know. And the one time that we went, I think it ended around 3 p.m. And so all these thoughts start racing through my mind. I'm talking to Courtney and Lisa, and I said to Courtney, without wanting to really let him know that I was concerned about the hour, see, when we come to worship, we only want to do that with the Lord for just this little space here. And I didn't want him to know that I thought like that. But I said to Courtney, I said, so how many, you know, what service are we going to? Do you have more than one? He says, oh, yes. He says, we belong to a very large church in Cincinnati. And we have to have two services. We have one at 10:30 and one at noon, and we're going to go to the 10:30 service. And I said, oh, okay, that was fine. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, the worst that can happen is the service will end at noon, and we'll be there an hour and a half. I learned a lot that day, I'm telling you. So off we go. And it was one of these churches that was so big that if you didn't get around the main parking lot, even they had buses, they'd bring you in from these satellite parking lots and things. It was a bit overwhelming at first, the police force, you know, getting you into the parking lot and all of this, and we'd never really been at a church this big before. But it was the most incredible experience. From the moment you got out of the car, you were just drawn into the congregation. It was like I was at a big family reunion, and everybody was glad to see me back. It was incredible. Even getting through, once you get out of the parking lot into the building, they're huge church, big wide aisles, hallways, packed full of people. It was almost suffocating, they were packed. And yet every person who noticed you, you were instantly welcomed into that group. And we sort of fought our way up through the stairs, and the sanctuary itself was this huge sort of semicircular stadium almost looking sanctuary, and above us was another huge balcony, and we got there about 10 minutes before it started. There was hardly a seat available already, and I'm guessing 3,500, 4,000, something like that probably. And you could see where they had a huge choir loft. They had an orchestra pit. The orchestra was there playing away. And I mean, the place was jumping. I mean, you were excited to be in the house of the Lord. You couldn't be otherwise. And it was an interesting experience, because it was a combination of, you'd see some people hugging, you know, and the sorts of things you'll see here, holy commotion, if you will. You'll see others, hands lifted up, praying, singing on their own, worshiping. Service hadn't even started yet. I thought, wait a minute, that's not on the bulletin. Ah, it was incredible. Wait a minute, we didn't say go yet. What happened here? And then what they do at that church, it's common, many I think, but at that particular one, they had a big procession came in. And the choir would come in singing and clapping, and their deacon body, deacons, listen to this now, the deacons all came in, and they were reciting verses out of Psalms. As they came in, getting everyone sort of called into worship. And then the choir got up and began to sing, and gospel music like you just hadn't heard. It was just terrific. I mean, we learned later they actually record CDs and things that you can buy out there. When the pastor finally got up to speak, you didn't know he was the pastor. So many people had come up to either share or spread the gospel or whatever it was. It took a while for you to realize, oh, this is actually the pastor speaking now. It was just this flow of things happening the whole time we were there. The choir at one point sang, and of course they would dance and everything else, but there was a big large group, the big heavy robes, all that. A poor fella fainted about the third row back in the choir. They didn't stop. The lady in the front, she's back here singing away, waving a bulletin, and a fella standing behind him, leaning over, waving away at another bulletin, and the poor guy is just, he's out cold. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, I think we've gone just a little overboard. we'll come back to this in just a minute, because Wes learned a lot that morning. And so finally the music all ended and you realize it's time for the pastor to preach, and it was an excellent, excellent message. This church in Cincinnati does just some super, super things outside the walls of the community. And it was terrific. Well, everybody in the congregation liked what he was hearing and they kept yelling at him to keep preaching. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, what do you think Chuck would do if we did preach on Chuck? We want to hear him. Do the Southern Baptists know this happens? You know? I just had never said, and he'd be getting near closing on a point, oh, preach on, brother, and he'd keep on preaching. I thought, wow, this is something. And invitation the same way, it just all flowed, really. And you got so caught up in worship. It's an experience Sherry and I will never, ever forget. It just drew you into God's presence. And we get in the car to go to lunch, and he turns the key on, and it's 1:30. We'd been in worship for 3 hours. I said to Courtney, you told me you had a second worship at noon. Oh, yeah, but they know we never get done at noon. And I'm thinking, you know, again, my little brain that's all bent out of shape, don't think right. Wait a minute, if I'm coming at noon, I expect to be allowed in there at noon. I'm not waiting till 1:30. It's a whole different way of looking at worship. They're not structured around programs and things. They're structured around getting in front of God and having a relationship with Him and getting everyone around them to have that same relationship. Well, I want to share something. It's not on these slides, but I want to share something this morning because here's where Wes, I'm going to expose some real ignorance now. As we were leaving, Courtney and Lisa in particular, Lisa asked me, well, what did you think of the worship service? And I said, well, it is the most terrific. You didn't want to leave. You honestly did not want to leave. And I said, but Lisa, I got to tell you, I know us Southern Baptists, we're sort of the frozen chosen when it comes to worship. But don't you think it's a little much when the choir gets so involved in what they're singing that somebody faints? Doesn't that seem a little much? And she said, Wes, she says, I can't believe you're saying that. She said, you need to read. And I'm just going to flip right over here for a second. The Second Chronicles, chapter 15. Now, perhaps some of you have seen these verses before, perhaps not, but I would encourage you to turn over to Second Chronicles 15, and we're going to share a few verses this morning that really opened my eyes to worship. Second Chronicles, why do I have first written down here? 15. I'm sorry, it's First Chronicles. That would have been interesting. It's First Chronicles. I have it marked right here, but I wrote, never mind. First Chronicles. This is why I'm not a scribe. I can't write very well. First Chronicles chapter 15, and I'll begin reading in the 14th verse. And this is David. The Ark of the Covenant has not been in Jerusalem. This is David beginning to bring it back. And it says, so the priests and the Levites consecrated themselves to bring up the Ark of the Lord God of Israel. The sons of the Levites carried the Ark of God on their shoulders with the poles thereon, as Moses had commanded, according to the word of the Lord. And then David spoke to the chiefs of the Levites to appoint their relatives, the singers, with instruments of music, harps, lyres, loud-sounding cymbals, to raise sounds of joy. And so the Levites appointed, and I'm going to skip all those fine names there, but they named the choir. At verse 18, and with them then their relatives of the second rank and another fine group of people. And then verse 19, and so the singers also were appointed to sound loud cymbals of bronze. And then another group of singers, you'll see, were appointed with harps in verse 20. And then another group were to lead with lyres tuned to the Sheminith. And then we have Shenaniah, chief of the Levites, was in charge of the singing. And he gave instruction in singing because he was skillful. And Berechiah and Elkanah were gatekeepers for the ark. And then we have another group here, the priests, then went ahead and blew trumpets before the ark of God, And Obed-Edom and Jehiah also were gatekeepers for the ark. And so here's this picture now, you'll see. And so it was David with the elders and the captains over thousands who went to bring up the ark of the covenant of the Lord from the house of Obed-Edom with joy, because God was helping the Levites who were carrying the ark of the covenant of the Lord. They sacrificed 7 bulls and 7 rams. Now David was clothed with a robe of fine linen with all the Levites who were carrying the ark, and the singers and the leader of the singing with the singers, and David also wore an ephod of linen. Now what this tells us first, just stop for just a moment, he's wearing very priestly, formal attire. If you came in a three-piece suit and a tie, you know, only you were a royal person. This is David now. And verse 28, then, thus all of Israel brought up the ark of the covenant of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of horns, with the sound of trumpets, with loud-sounding cymbals, with harps and lyres. And it happened when the ark of the covenant of the Lord came into the city of David that Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked out of the window and saw King David leaping and celebrating, and she despised him in her heart. And if we had time to go over to Samuel, we'd see there's even more detail about this. And what happened was David was so excited that God was returning the ark to Jerusalem, that they would now be one again, that he put this big band together and singers, and he was dancing and celebrating and dressed all in this formal attire. And the woman, Solomon's daughter, looks down and disdain over such a high government official acting in such a way. That woman will never have a child, if you read in 2 Samuel. David was doing what he was supposed to be doing, rejoicing with the Lord. And that was what Lisa was trying to get me to understand. Worship is our response to God's presence. There isn't, I don't want to say there isn't a right or wrong. We'd be a little careful there, but... We sometimes get so caught up in the formality of things, we forget the real reason we're here is to worship God first. And David was clearly doing that. The other one that I want to share with you is my experience. Perhaps you will learn from this as well. If you turn for a moment over to Luke. Luke chapter 18. There's all kinds of responses to God's presence in worship. One would be David's. Dancing, music, singing. There's another that Christ talks about, and I must confess that it is often mine, and I think you'll understand why in a moment. Luke chapter 18, if we look at verses 9 through 14, Christ is teaching here. And Christ, and he also told this parable to some people who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and viewed others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and was praying this to himself, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, swindlers, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I pray, I pay tithes of all that I get. But the tax collector, standing some distance away, was even unwilling to lift up his eyes to heaven, but was beating his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, the sinner. Christ says, I tell you this man went to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted. And I think sometimes, too, when we come into God's presence, rather than rejoicing, I think sometimes we're humbled. I am, each time that I think of all that Christ went through for me, knowing me the way that he does. Then I wanted to share, Luke 18? I didn't think I was over there yet. I'm not used to having slides behind me. I'm used to actually talking to them if I have to. Now, where are we? Oh, all right. In fact, because of time, I want to go ahead and skip past that. If we can, I want to come down to the promise keepers I've shared once before with you, and I'll very quickly summarize that. And that was what it felt like to stand with 1 million other men and just to hear the shofar blow, calling everyone into worship. In an instant, 1 million of us sensed God's presence in that group. It was the most phenomenal thing I've ever experienced. And I think it very much gave a picture in my mind's eye of what it's going to be like the day Christ returns and we're all gathered at his throne. Now, I wanted to share for a moment this another worship experience that Sherry and I have had. Actually, two different ones. The first one was, Sherry was involved in a very, very serious accident years ago with her son Mike and 11 other people. I think 14 went to the hospital. Two, I think, died in the ambulance and were revived, if I remember right. I might be off a little. It was an extremely serious accident. They were almost all children. There were four adults. It was grandparents and parents, and then children and grandchildren in both cars that came together at an intersection. And my son was hurt very bad, but someone in the car with him, a young girl, was near death. And it was just an overwhelming time for me. But I remember coming towards the doors of the emergency room and just falling on my knees right there outside the doors of that emergency room and lifting that child up and not caring who was coming by or who was thinking what. And in that moment, God brought a sense of peace, not just to me, but to my wife who was inside and didn't know that I was praying, and brought that girl through. But I think, it was a miracle what he did for that girl. But I think, again, I learned you don't need to be in a church building to worship God. It was quite an experience. And then about two or three years later, we had left church on a Sunday morning. We were driving home, and we witnessed an accident where somebody ran through an intersection and broadsided another car, and it was our next-door neighbor who got hit. And his teenage sons and our daughter went to school together, and he was in really, really sad shape. And they whisk him off to the hospital, and I think it was the next day, his son called and asked that we'd come and pray for them. And I don't recall, I don't believe his dad was saved, although we think perhaps he was in the end. But at the time, the two Laotian boys knew they needed help, and it was sort of like they called and asked us to come up and pray over him. And we went up to the hospital to pray for their dad. That was the goal. And we got up to the hospital where the bed was, and I got everybody we could find, and we made this big prayer circle around the bed. There must have been, I don't know, 14, 15 folks. It was a good group. Anyone I could find who would be willing to pray with us. And we started out to pray for their dad. But something happened, and that prayer became a time of worship. And the sense that God filled that place, and we began to just praise his presence there and the peace that he brought there. And I realized again, worship doesn't have to be in a church building. And so with that, the other one I was going to bring up this morning, but again, I think, is there one more, or am I not used to this? No, good. Okay, then I don't need to skip that because it's not on there. That's even better. So with that, let's momentarily then, what can we learn from all of this? What can we learn about true worship? Go ahead and put the first one up there. The first thing we can learn is we must seek him. And again, there's some verses that will come up here. We'll just do it this way. The first thing we learn about worship is we have to seek God. And I think there's a scripture verse will pop up here in a moment. I like these magic screens. They're pretty neat, you know. They know exactly what you need. But from there you will seek the Lord your God, and you will find him if you search for him with all your heart and soul. And so if we want to have worship, our first thing is we have to come seeking God. If we roll in here on a Sunday morning or wherever it is, and we're not seeking God, the likelihood that you're going to worship him is probably very low. So come to worship wherever it is, seeking him. The second thing that we're going to learn is that we have to sense his presence. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." But he knew it when he woke up. If we're going to have worship, if we're going to respond to God, then we're going to sense that he is with us, just as he is this morning. And then the third thing that's going to happen from worship is that we're going to want to serve him. And the verse that we get from there, of course, is well known to all from Joshua. Now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And in fact, Joshua goes on to say, and for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. One of our natural reactions to worship is wanting to serve the God who loved us so much that he sent his son to us. And so if I was to sum up a lesson that the Lord has for us this morning, it's that worship isn't about our surroundings. It isn't about the music. It isn't about the message. It isn't about what I'm wearing or what you're wearing. It isn't even about the place. We don't need 100,000 people to worship God. It's what's inside. It's our response. It isn't about you. It's about him. Not about me. It's about God. And so if we're going to worship God, we need to begin to focus on what our response is when we sense a divine presence. So as we close this morning, I'm going to ask Chuck to come up. And if there's a response that you want to share with him this morning about the divine presence that we've had here today, Chuck would be more than willing to chat with you. I'm also going to ask you that from here, you take with you a stronger sense of God's presence. How many of you, you don't need to raise your hands, but how many of you have had a little stronger sense of God's presence this week with the passing of the Pope? And I know we're not Catholic, and the worship police will haul me out in a second, but you know, to me, one of the things that the passing of a leader, if you will, such as Pope Paul, who stood for the gospel, it draws to our minds immediately, God's presence is real, heaven is real, hell is real, death is something that we'll all face. And I don't know, these past couple of days, as we've sort of went along the steps of Paul's passing, I think in my heart, and I'll bet in yours, it's made you realize that God's a very real spirit. He's the creator of all things, and he loved us so much that even though he knows us inside out, he gave his son for us. And when this life is over, what a blessing to get to spend it in heaven. If you don't know Christ this morning, you need to come up and talk to Chuck this morning. You need to respond to God's presence in this place today. He's just such, you can't even describe God. And my love for him goes beyond anything I can say to you this morning. But if you don't know him, you don't know what you're missing.